Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe. Hey everybody, how are you? I'm Larry Port with the Dream Job Cafe. And I'm very excited about this episode today. This is going to be a slightly different direction. We're going to be talking about strategic career skills. And I have with me Perry Ginsburg, who's an old friend of mine. She's the founder and head coach of Workforce Ready Now. Perry, thank you so much for helping me out today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, Larry.
Right. So I guess before we get into it, I think, you know, Workforce Ready Now, you would describe it, it really helps people like strategically and tactically approach getting a job or internship or things like that. Is that right? Or am I misrepresenting?
Yeah, that is. I really do heavily focus on college graduates, new graduates, and really early stage professionals in navigating the workforce. I have found that they're coming out of universities with amazing education and textbook smarts, but they really haven't been taught how to network, how to prepare their resume. The job market today is way more competitive than anything you and I faced when we started, and they're just not being offered the training and the skills necessary to be able to compete.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine it also might be like kind of a cat and mouse game too, as things might change, or maybe, I don't know, but I would love to hear, like, you know, I know that you've had an interesting journey. The first time I encountered you, you were running a hair salon for children. So you've had like kind of a long and very diverse career, which I think is an exciting message for young people to hear personally, right?
I appreciate that. And you're right. I often use the expression that careers are rarely linear. I think that's a good thing. And the reason why I say that is today, these students who are looking for internships or getting ready to graduate, whether it's self-imposed, whether it's imposed by family or society, they are under the impression that first job is going to make or break their entire career. Mm. And they put so much pressure on going after the perfect job. And my message is, any job is going to teach you something. It may teach you what you don't like, but often that's just as valuable as discovering what you do like. And for me, I am educated as a civil and environmental engineer. I did that for a couple of years. Didn't love it, you know, look to the future, didn't love it. I transitioned into management consulting, which was great, and I did really love it. I had to relocate to South Florida for family reasons and no longer could travel, so I had to pivot again. Landed at Office Depot, where I became a director in their project management office for many years, and eventually departed from the corporate lifestyle because I had that entrepreneurial bug and I really wanted to see for myself what I could do. But had I not moved and transitioned into all of those roles, I wouldn't have the wherewithal today to do what I'm doing. So I think the fact that I've pivoted so many times has really set me up for success.
You know, it's kind of funny. Your story like sounds a lot like mine. I was not a civil engineer, but I was a film major as an undergraduate. And I got out and I started working in that industry and hated it. And then I switched to computer science and I had a great job with a big Wall Street bank. And then for family reasons, I moved to South Florida and I had to leave that job. And then eventually I ended up doing entrepreneurial stuff. So it is a similar track, but I think it's a good message to hear that, like, you know, it almost seems like, and almost everybody I've interviewed on this podcast says similar things. They kind of go in one direction and then they have a certain level of skills and aptitudes built up and then an opportunity presents them and boom, they seize it and just it kind of changes.
Yeah, well, I really feel, I don't think it's changed. I mean, I graduated some 30 years ago. I don't think it's changed that we really don't know what we don't know. And until we get exposed to it, how could we be expected to make such concrete decisions about who we want to be when we grow up? Now, there are those who have known since they're 4 years old that they want to be a doctor or they want to be a lawyer. Great. I think that's amazing. But the vast majority of us didn't really know exactly what we wanted to do until we came across it or came across what we didn't want to do. So process of elimination, you know, we kept pivoting.
So in terms of pivoting, let's pivot the conversation over to one thing I wanted to get your expertise on today, which is what's known as applicant tracking systems or ATSs. So you read about them in the news. Well, for those of us that are kind of like employment labor nerds, but it really has a major effect on how people seek jobs. Can you kind of let people know what these things are and how they're using them, even if they don't know they're using them?
Absolutely. And you're right. It is huge in the workforce today. And there's a major misconception. So the applicant tracking system, the ATS, is software. It is not AI. It is not a robot. It's not this evil thing that's out to get you. It is software. And I liken it to the Common App that students went through when they applied to college. The Common App was developed because the number of students that were applying to college was increasing. Our ability to handle it from a technological perspective, they created this wonderful thing. Well, with the introduction of the Common App, the number of applicants that they could handle increased tremendously. What happens in the job force is, with all of this technology today, a job posting goes up on LinkedIn. If it's an exciting one, they could get 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 applicants.
Oh my.
And a recruitment team doesn't have the bandwidth to get through those 3,000 applicants, plus the fact that they're probably running 10 job searches at once. Mm-hmm. So what an applicant tracking system is, literally a tool, a filter that the recruiter, I use the word programming, it's drag and drop. Okay. We're not talking about software engineering here, but the recruiter goes in, uploads the job description, and there's a category of must-haves, and they put in the keywords that the resume must have. And then there's a section that is nice to have, and they put in the keywords that would be nice to have. Now, these keywords could be Excel, could be collaborative, could be Salesforce. It could be a hard skill. It could be a soft skill, a characteristic. It could be anything they choose. But the word that they put in has to match on your resume perfectly. So what happens is they program it and they allocate a score. So here's the must-haves. If you don't have the must-haves, you're at end of story. If you don't have some of the nice to haves, or you do have the nice to haves, you're getting scored, okay? And there's no creative thought to this. It's 100% the thoughts of the recruiter into the system. There's nothing creative happening. With that said, if it's parsing text, if you put anything in that resume that screws it up, such as a picture of yourself or or images or untraditional formatting, it throws off the ATS. And even if you have all of the keywords, it won't parse it correctly because you've thrown in some obstacles into the formatting of your resume. So the two key things you have to think of when you're talking about an applicant tracking system is keyword matching, which I'm happy to go into deeper with you, and formatting. If you look online and you Google ATS compliant templates.
Oh, we'll see. Okay.
There's tons of them out there. But get your picture off of your resume. Get that fancy logo off of your resume. It is stopping you from getting an interview.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Like, so my daughter, Samantha, she goes to Ohio State and she's in the Fisher School of Business. And they have this like resume template, and maybe it's perfect or for this kind of situation. But when I look at it, because what ended up happening with me when I was running my company is I'd end up with like a stack of resumes on my desk. And being a visual person, I was naturally drawn to stuff that had better visual layout. But these Fisher resumes are all very tightly spaced. They're Word-based documents, first of all. I don't know what technology these ATSs need, or if they need Word or PDF or whatever. And they're all Times New Roman, and they're just like, they stretch to the absolute margins, and, you know, they're usually confined to one page. So is there something about that format that is ideal for an ATS, or is...
Yes and no. So you and I probably had similar instruction growing up. We're somewhat peers. I think I'm older, but we're somewhat peers. And you had to have a 1-inch margin around all sides. We had fancy resume paper, you know, all those things are out there.
Right.
Now, readability matters. for when it gets into the human hands.
Right.
It's not for the ATS. They don't care if your margin's a half an inch or an inch. They don't care if the words are tightly together. As long as the headings are clear and set apart, like they need to see the headings, as long as dates are easily identified, they don't care about the tightness. However, the human does. So although I no longer do a 1 inch because I do believe it does need to be a 1 page for a college kid, because it is rare that a college kid has enough expertise that they need to go on to a second page. But I strategically bold. I use a touch of color. I do different things so that when you as the hiring manager looks at that resume, you have 7 seconds to show that hiring manager what you're about. If in 7 seconds, your eyes didn't gravitate to something that made you go, oh, you're not going to look any further. So when I build a resume, not only does it have to be applicant tracking compliant, it has to pass the 7 second test. You have to be interested in me in 7 seconds, because then you're going to be willing to give me another 10 seconds.
If not,
door's closed.
Yes. Okay. So I can validate from my perspective as having interviewed all these kids when I was building my business, and you have these stacks of resumes and they might be like 100 or 200 stacks, you know, resumes thick. And you got to, I mean, put yourself in my position. Let's say that you're running a company, you got a million things to do and you want to get out the door because you want to go to your kid's little league game. So you're looking at these resumes and you want to get through them as quickly as you can. So like, I mean, forget misspellings. That's an automatic off to the side, right? Like immediately. I know people don't like to hear that, but you got to put yourself in our shoes. So I think, yes, that's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. But back to the technology side for a second with these applicant tracking systems. Can you talk a little bit about this? I read an article in the Wall Street Journal, and I keep seeing articles like this. But the one that I read was referring to a bunch of people, a bunch of students, and maybe you can validate this based on your work with students or not. They're sending out hundreds, if not thousands, of resumes and hearing crickets from anybody. And then at the end of one of the articles, the student said to the reporter, I guess I will have to start changing my approach and incorporate more networking. So I was shocked by that. So I guess the first question is, like, isn't that a given, number one? And number two, is this an experience that a lot of people have where they're just getting crickets in response to hundreds of submissions?
Yeah. So yes to everything. So yes, kids, I'm going to call them kids. Okay. Students, those that are aggressive are applying to hundreds. Then you've got the others that are hoping that a job's going to come and just, you know, show up at their front doorstep. But those that are aggressively applying are applying to hundreds and hundreds, and they're being ghosted. Many of them think, oh, it's because of the evil applicant tracking system, which I'm now telling you, it's not making judgment calls. It's looking to see how you match to a job description. So the answer is yes, that is happening. The issue, no, I'm not a psychiatrist, so I'm this is my personal opinion, and you and I have kids roughly at the same age, so I have more experience than just my clients. They grew up in a completely different age of communication. Their communication is typically behind a phone screen. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I ask my kid to pick up a phone and call someone, make a doctor's appointment or whatever, the fear that they have in their face, like, what am I going to say? I'm like, start with hello. Like, it's not common sense to them. So networking scares this generation. They don't know. First, they'll tell you people don't do that anymore. And yes, they do.
I think as long as people are people, they'll be networking, right?
Pretty sure they still do it. And I have a really timely example. I couldn't make this up. It happened today. My son is at Florida State and he is graduating this year. He's actually can graduate in December, but if he doesn't have what he wants planned, he's going to stick it out for another.
Go Noles.
Go Noles. Thank you. He wants to be in the MLB business operations.
And right.
He'll scrape seeds off the dugout floor. He understands he's got to start from the bottom. And he's applying to everything, just like that Wall Street Journal. And he's gotten a couple of, not nearly as much considering the effort. So I said to him, why don't you find 3 people in every one of the MLB teams? Now, I have data, so I could help him point them in the right direction. I want three people from every one of the MLB teams. And then I want you to customize a brief 300 character. We're not talking essays. Message on LinkedIn that refers to their team, to their position, and would they be open to a chat? You're not saying, hey, will you hire me? It's saying, I'm looking to get some intel. I'm looking to get some information. Would you be willing to chat with me? Well, just yesterday, after 3 weeks of Aiden having to follow up, he had a talk with somebody at the Rays, Tampa Bay Rays. She herself did not have a position, but he mentioned that he has applied to three roles with them. She wrote him today saying, it was great meeting you. Great talking to you. Your resume is amazing. I went and spoke to the head managers for each of the three departments you applied to, and I made sure that they had your resume in hand.
That's awesome. Yeah. What more could you ask for? You know?
You can't ask for more than that. The way that I coach, your resume matters. Your resume often gets the door open. But interviewing is relationship building. It is how you make someone feel. When I coach somebody how to interview, yes, your words matter, but what's more important is how you make the interviewer feel. Because you remember feelings long past you remember what someone said. It's how you made them feel. So if you get somebody to just chat with you and you make them feel good, you make them feel like, wow, this kid's got it together. They want to help you. They want to work for you. But kids today are afraid of going down that path. And that is the secret to landing jobs right now.
Interesting. So, I mean, if you're listening to this and you're like, you're looking for jobs, I mean, you got to realize that if you are one of these people that is willing to go this distance and do the networking, then you have a major advantage over your peers, I think, right? That's one takeaway.
100%. And that skill is not just for your first job. I tell people all the time, because I coach them on how to really use LinkedIn and what to say. Even if that person can't help you today with a job, they become a permanent part of your professional network. And 2 years down the line or 3 years down the line, when you're looking again and you're looking to pivot or grow, you still now have this professional network that you've grown. And that person could be really influential for you later on in your future. It's not a one and done.
So let me ask you this. If there's like, where we're talking, you know, we started off talking about the applicant tracking systems. We're talking about networking. Like, how should people think about allocating their like resources or time or strategy when they're thinking about their job search? Like, how much of it should they be thinking about, okay, submitting resumes? How much should they be thinking about like in-person or LinkedIn networking? And is it like, is one to support the other? Is it like I submitted the resume on the ATS and then I followed up with somebody internal? Or like, how does it all fit together?
That's a great question. And there are multiple paths to your job search. And obviously it depends on who has the time to do what. Let's start with the typical. Okay. The typical student is on LinkedIn or on Indeed and they're looking for jobs, right? Actually, I'd love to back up and give first the strategy that people need to use to deal with the ATS and get that out of the way.
Okay.
A lot of things that you're going to read, a lot of things that they're hearing is that they have to customize their resume for every single job that they apply to. Yes, in the ideal world, that is the solution. But we're not in an ideal world. They've got exams. They've got other responsibilities. It's not realistic.
Not very scalable.
It's not scalable. Mm-hmm. So I've devised a strategy that I work with up my students that work great. Most of my students, they know what they like. They know what they don't like. But they don't really know what they want to do. And they're casting a wide net, which I love. And they're open to lots of different explorations and conversations. So what I do is I tell them, go find me 10 job descriptions. I don't care where they are. It doesn't have to be feasible, but 10 job descriptions that somewhat speak to your interests and your background and give me all 10. I then put all 10 in chat, okay? Because I do use AI when necessary. I throw them all in chat and I say, I want you to create me 3 buckets based off of these resumes. I want you to look at responsibilities, skills, tools, create 3 buckets. And it's going to return back to me. Maybe it's client-facing roles, operation roles, and sales roles. I'm making this up. So now I've got 3 buckets, which in my mind, I'm going to create 3 resumes. going to create three resumes. Now I'm going to go and say, okay, break down the keywords, key skills, and key responsibilities that are in common within each bucket. I now take that information and I create three versions of the resume. Yep, a little bit of work up front, but I got a lot of help here. Three resumes. Now, 95% of the jobs that you apply to, one of these three resumes are going to be a fit for. So you do that up front and you put those resumes. Now, I go online, I see a job, I could put the job description right in chat along with my three resumes and say which resume is best suited for this job. And it's going to tell me which resume to use.
This is so clever.
Clever. So I have the resumes. Now, let's say they apply to a job. They use the right resume. They apply to the job. If they have the option for a cover letter, they're writing a cover letter. It matters. Now, what I instruct them to do, start with LinkedIn. Go to LinkedIn. Look up the company that you just applied to. Go to the People tab. First, look to see if you can find an alum. I don't care in what capacity they're working. Look to find an alum. At least it's a little bit of a warmer connection. You find that alum, you message them right away. Not, hey, hire me, but I just applied and I'm looking to do some research. Would you be open to a chat? You don't aggressively go and say, hey, is there anything you can do to help me get an interview? You're saying, hey, could we chat? I'd like to learn more about the company. Because you impress that person, they will be vocal on your behalf. So I look for the alum. I look for somebody, management, manager, director. Not too high. I don't go to the CEO necessarily, but I look for that manager, director in the field that you just applied to. And I have a similar message that I go out to them. I applied and I'm just looking to do some research on the company. Would you be open to chatting with me? And I do the rule of three. Try to find an alum if you can. If you can't find an alum, find somebody who's maybe 1 or 2 years ahead of you. They're junior enough. Junior people love it when you reach out to them because it makes them feel important. The more senior people are like, oh, the junior people are like, oh, look at me. I'm important. People want advice from me. So go after somebody a little bit more junior to ask, how did you do it? How did you get your foot in the door? What made you stand out? Go for a manager or director who can give you some intel about what is the company like? What do you look for in your candidates? And if you can find an alum, go for it. Otherwise, try to find somebody in talent acquisition. But the key is don't ask to be hired. Ask, chat, make a relationship, talk to somebody. If you impress them, it's unbelievable what they're willing to do for you. So anytime one of my students applies to a job, they need to find up to three people on LinkedIn to message, to support it. You can't just apply. Applying and doing that is not a strategy. It doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, you're more on the like kind of like tactical and strategic. So you're kind of further along the pipeline and I'm more on the like, let me figure out what I want to do with my life side of things. And I tell them to do a similar thing, like find somebody that's in the industry that you're targeting from your school and definitely do not ask for a job. Be like, okay, what's your work like, you know, and things like this. And are you happy? Is this what you thought it would be? Is this what you wanted to do? Or, you know, those kind of questions. And, you know, things lead to things. But I'll tell you what, like, I mean, Perry, you have such an amazing wealth of information. And if they want to find out more, it's workforcereadynow.com, correct?
Correct, it is.
And when we're talking about like resumes and we're talking about ATS systems and we're talking about LinkedIn introductions, I mean, this is like the first piece of the funnel. Like as you start moving down, I see on your website that you have stuff for all these different stages, like getting through interview processes and all these different things. Can you talk, I mean, just real briefly, because I'd like to have you back and talk about some of these more advanced stages.
I love that. I love that. Thanks, Larry. Yeah. Okay. So people hire me to focus on where they want to develop more. So it's not one size fits all. But let's say someone wanted the full package. What do? They come to me. First thing we do is a resume. I have a great example. I'm working with a UT Austin junior econ, obviously bright, personable, everything. If you met him, you'd want to hire him. He's the Wall Street Journal case. He's applied to 1,000 jobs and is getting absolutely no interviews. That door opens. There is no doubt this kid's getting the job. No door opened on his resume. I reworked it. I focused on A resume shouldn't be a list of everything you've done. A resume should be, what can you do? Refer to what you've done in a way that shows a hiring manager what your future will be. I retooled it. I made sure it was applicant tracking system. In week one, he got 3 interviews. Now, for 2 months, he's applied to over a thousand jobs and got 0. In 1 week, he got 3 interviews. He didn't change. It was just the way he communicated himself, the way that he represented himself. So I start with the resume. I make sure their LinkedIn profile is optimized. I teach them how to network. They don't know how to network. I'm being really stereotypical in general, but this is a pain point for them. I hold their hand. I help them with their word track until they can walk on their own. I teach them how to follow up. They don't understand the art of follow up. How many times does a kid say to you, I sent an email? Like, well, I sent an email. My job is done. You know that one? So I'm teaching, that's not enough. Got to remember, you're the one who wants something. So you're going to have to work harder for it. So I teach them everything about networking. I go through multiple rounds of interview coaching, from the STAR methodology and behavioral and technical interviews. I have become extremely competent in case interviewing, and I help kids for their case interviews if they're going the management consulting route, or, you know, the Bains and the McKinseys. My team markets them. So once I know what paths they want to go down, we have to curate very, very specific context. So while they're applying to jobs online, and they need to do that, I have the power to be able to email people directly and to get their resume into 500 or 1,000 strategic inboxes and open up connections and doors that they don't have the resources to do on their own. So all of this together, I'm hoping opens up doors. I'm hoping leads to offers, but I'm really focused on giving them the skills that will take them through their entire professional life. And I focus very heavily on ensuring that they are confident in themselves and they know how to articulate their value. Like, that's my goal.
There you have it, folks. Perry Ginsburg, thank you so much. Check out our website, workforcereadynow.com. Thanks so much, Perry.
Thank you. I look forward to visiting with you again sometime soon.
Absolutely. We'll have you back on. And for those of you, please, if you like this podcast, like it, share it with your friends. And if you can, please be grateful for something today.